This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of July, 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of July 2016. This week, the editors were Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are: decision is due on new sports centre, children's centres to close, and vigil to remember the Somme. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley.
Decision is due on new sports centre. Winchester civic chiefs are making a key decision over sporting facilities in the city. The council cabinet was yesterday, as the Chronicle went to press, deciding what sort of sports centre it wants, including whether to go for a swimming pool of 25 metres length or an Olympic-sized 50 metres. No decision was being made on where the centre should be, and the report to Cabinet makes no recommendations. The council is yet to decide whether it will revamp the 40-year-old River Park Leisure Centre or build a new one at Bar End, estimated to cost around £29 million, either on the Garrison Ground or King George Playing Field. However, concerns have been raised about the overall plan for a new centre at Bar End. Winchester sports campaigners are calling for the council to protect Winchester's playing fields from housing development if a new leisure centre is built in Bar End. Emma Black, chief executive of Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, told the town forum last week that she feared the development of a leisure centre in Bar End would impact the King George V playing field. She also called for the City Council to do more to negotiate with Tesco to retain the adjacent Garrison Ground as open space. It is owned by the company and is leased to the City Council, but the lease expires in 6 years and Tesco wants to develop it for housing. A new leisure centre in Bar End could provide a 50-metre Olympic-sized pool, but at an extra £4 million. Both Miss Back and Jeff Wright of St Giles Residents Association are calling for the council to seek a resolution with Tesco. The report to Cabinet stated the council is talking to Tesco and offered to buy the Garrison Ground for £300,000, but Tesco refused. Miss Back called for the council to rethink its plans for the leisure centre and look again at a previously refused option of building it on the Garrison Ground. She said many local people are keen to see the open space at Bar End protected and enhanced, with new sports facilities and better access to and through the site. As local residents and community representatives, we wish to see a whole site plan developed for Bar End with a high degree of community participation. We would also urge the City Council and its partners specifically to look again at option 4 as a site for the new community sport and leisure centre. I would simply add a plea to the town forum to ensure that all our public sports grounds are protected from non-sports related development. Indeed, the development of a new community sport and leisure centre on the Garrison Ground may be the best way to ensure this vital recreational amenity isn't lost to house building, now or in the future. Council leader Stephen Godfrey accused Miss Back of throwing unhelpful hand grenades into the discussions. He said, "I think Miss Back is using information which is incorrect. No sports grounds are being built on. We have done everything we possibly can to protect the sports grounds, and at the Garrison ground, we have been pressing Tesco very hard to buy the ground from them to retain it as a sports ground." Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club are calling for the city to have a 50-metre pool. A statement said, "We are very keen to see a 50-metre, 8-lane community swimming pool, in addition to leisure and warm water being provided at a new sport and leisure facility, as we feel this is what is needed for the whole community."
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Children's centres to close. Plans to close 43 children's centres across Hampshire, including 7 in the Winchester district, have been approved. Campaigners fear the devastating cull of Sure Start will leave parents without the early help needed to avoid crises for them or their children. They will now have to travel to one of 11 district hubs for the most serious support. The Winchester district one is in Wickham, a round trip of 34 miles with no direct bus route. Hampshire County Council said the changes would target those in most need and families would have access to a wide range of local services. Protesters were pessimistic before the meeting in Winchester on Friday, but turned out with trade unionists to make their last stand. The proposals have sparked widespread protest, with marches and petitions culminating in a demonstration in Winchester in May. Lead campaigners Catherine Ovenden has pledged to raise money for a legal challenge, but missed the meeting through illness. Councillor Jackie Porter, Lib Dem spokeswoman for children, told the meeting that rising demand would require more staff, wiping out the council's savings in the long run, while the mother's mental health could be neglected. After approving the scheme, Councillor Keith Manns, executive member for Children's Services, said the 11 children's centres that are to double as the family support service hub have been selected on the basis that they are in an area of high deprivation and are the most used centres in that district. It is important to understand that this will not be the only location delivering services, along with the outreach work that staff carry out and the various health services in local communities. There will be a wide range of services that all families can access, being provided by local community groups and independent providers. He also approved 4 new proposals following a cross-party scrutiny meeting. They involved monitoring of centre closures and mental health, a digital strategy to inform parents of how they could access services, and support for community groups wanting to provide help at centres set for closure. Campaigning mum of one, Lynn Tolman, said the decision was devastating and branded the extra recommendations nonsense. And this is accompanied by a picture of various people campaigning, waving flags. There are parents and children there and 1 or 2 people. And I see Patrick Davis, the Labour councillor, is there as well.
Jane's got the third headline story,
which is Vigil to Remember the Somme. As dusk settled, a single candle was lit, a village's poignant tribute to the men who died at the Battle of the Somme. Villagers and ex-soldiers had held a vigil on the eve of the 100th anniversary last Thursday. They gathered at the war memorial in Sutton Scotney at 9 p.m, just as daylight was ebbing away. In a short service, the names of the local men who died in the battle were read out. The prayers were led by Reverend Karen Cousef. The candle was lit by Lucy Dowson, the chairman of the Wanston Parish Council, and Philip Keating read a letter sent by a soldier on the eve of the battle in which he lost his life. The event was organised by the Sutton Scotney branch of the Royal British Legion. Its standards were held in the roadway, and a few cars sheepishly drove between the memorial and the crowd of around 40 people during the vigil. Blair Southerden, who researched the local soldiers, said, "It's important these names are remembered. With everything else going on in the last week, it is pretty good that people have still got this on the radar. It helps to bring the community together." Attending was City Council leader Stephen Godfrey, who served in the Royal Artillery. He said, "It is important we mark the beginning of the Great War, and we will mark the end of the war. The Somme was a significant battle in which thousands died. We have to recognise that." John Simmons, 83, of Wanston Close, said, "I served in the Korean War and lost friends, so I thought I would come down. You can't imagine it, really. 20,000 men killed in one day." George Gray, 85, retired farmer, said, "My father served in the Royal Engineers in World War I. It is the right thing for me to be here. When I was the age of those Somme soldiers, the very idea of what they did frightened the bits off me. I couldn't have been so brave." The Hampshire Regiment went over the top on July the 1st. They advanced at 7:30 a.m. and by the end of the day, 26 officers and 559 men were killed, wounded or missing. On July the 1st alone, there were 60,000 British casualties. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the twilight vigil at Sutton Scotney next to the war memorial, with the villagers and people in uniform, both male and female, holding the flags, heads down in prayer to remember those who died on that day.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, the editorial comment, and finally, first person. I'll start with the death notices. Brown, Jean Brown, peacefully. Childs, Eileen Nay Webster Childs, peacefully, aged 83. Churchill, Stella Churchill, peacefully at home, aged 90. Dobbin, Josephine Cara Dobbin, peacefully in Southsea, aged 79. Gerard, Ron Gerard, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a long illness, aged 80. Instrell, Christine Instrell, peacefully at home with her family at a care home in Lancashire. Kellaway, Joyce Henderson Kellaway, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 87. Parnell, Anthony Tony Parnell, peacefully at home, aged 81. Wingate, Betty Wingate, peacefully at home with the family, aged 86. And finally, Wright, Michael John Wright, RIBA, former architect at Hampshire County Council, suddenly in Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 71. And now we've got Christian comment.
This one is headed, "A Time to Get to Know Each Other Again," and it's written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy. "A person who thinks only about building walls and not building bridges is not Christian. This is not the gospel," said Pope Francis about the recent Republican Party primary in the United States. It could also be a warning in post-Brexit Britain, as our long-standing and widening social divisions have become more evident than ever. Younger divided from older, the left behind divided from the professionals, rural divided from metropolitan. The United Kingdom is anything but united. We have two party leaders stepping down and one hanging on at the time of writing amid acrimony and recrimination. A European priest colleague ministering in this country feels like a bargaining chip amid the brutalization of political language. With some justification, commentators have referred to a culture war. This is a time for bridge building. As we look forward, it's right to acknowledge both the bereavement and joy which the referendum has brought, along with the political and economic uncertainty which is our current reality. The majority of British people voted to leave the European Union, and the vast majority of these did so for good and honourable reasons. A tiny proportion will have voted out of prejudice, but this is a good time to follow the advice of Elizabeth I, given during an earlier time of religious and political turmoil. I will not open windows into men's souls. It's wrong to make sweeping judgments about those who voted differently from us, and phrases such as Little Englander or liberal elite have no place in the reconciliation of our country. People on both sides of the debate voted to build bridges rather than erect walls, but they came to different conclusions on how this was best done. For some, the EU had become a wall against the wider world, and they voted to leave. For others, the EU was a necessary bridge to the wider world. What I found concerning about the debate is the number of people who've said, "I don't know anyone who voted to leave." There's a danger that we're comfortable only among friends and colleagues who are similar to us, and we've lost the friendship and shared experiences of people whose world view and social circumstances are different from our own. The South London priest, Giles Fraser, put it like this: "We have become strangers to each other, and it's high time we got to know each other again." The central act of Christian worship is often called communion, emphasizing the fellowship which is built up. We celebrate a collective meal of bread and wine, cementing us into a relationship both with God and with one another. We think of the altar as God's table, and we recall how Jesus welcomed the outsider to meals. With Jesus, the tax collector or prostitute could be alongside the religious Pharisee. Jesus' best love story, the Good Samaritan, embraces the humanity of the despised outsider. We need, more than ever, this spirit of social inclusion as we explore what it means to be a generous and progressive country outside the EU.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by using the telephone number, which is 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is The Editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 14 letters this week. We'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, this headline is "Alsford Criticism Misplaced," and it's accompanied by a very attractive picture of West Street in Alsford, and the caption says, "Castigated post-Brexit for nihilism in the pages of the New York Times." "Sir, Mr. Wyman, ferocious attack on Alsford Chronicle, June the 30th, talks about the looks that residents give you when they glare down their noses with entitlement. If they were indeed glaring down their noses, I cannot see how they were giving Mr. Wyman a look, unless directing their gaze, stroke, glare downwards was the only way of focusing on him. Alsford residents are like any who live in beautiful market towns. They know where they are going and of the beauty that surrounds them. Alsford visitors, on the other hand, are looking around at the marvels that the town offers. So some look down or ahead, moving with purpose en route to their destination, while others look around, sampling new delights in every shop window, every street, every footpath, every building, every stream. And the majority of the residents, I guess, voted to stay in Europe. Piers Armstrong, New Farm Road, Alsford."
And along the same theme, "Personal Heaven." "Sir, you have, I'm sure, received many letters from Alsford worthies reacting to the news item in which a young man described living in the town as his personal hell. I join with those who describe Alsford as their personal heaven, but this sort of heaven cannot accommodate everybody. It is precisely the vaunted attractions of the town that make the dreams of my own grandfatherly generation unattainable to anyone not long settled here. For me, this is a marvellously cohesive society, very friendly and mutually supportive, especially of the lonely elderly, and such a happy town, enjoying the full range of the shops and services we need. I can see, however, that it can appear to others to be an exclusive and excluding society. The key to entry is money, and lots of it, for to buy or rent a property in Alresford has become extraordinarily costly. People like me bought into this society long ago at a cheap rate, before its attractions were so rarely seen elsewhere and so widely publicised. People in their 20s or 30s simply cannot earn in rural Hampshire the fortune required to gain even a foothold here. The more we boast about the wonders of life in Alresford, the more the young resent their exclusion and despise our smugness. The only way to end this intergenerational bitterness is to build more houses, very many more houses. But then there is the risk that the dream of my generation evaporates. Is it possible that the young of today can in middle age rebuild a society in a larger Alresford, which is both cohesive and inclusive? That is the next dream. And that was from Peter Pooley, Station Approach, Alresford.
And this one is headed Words of Wisdom. Sir, I hope that Steve Brine knows the magnificent words of the great Conservative speaker, writer and MP, Edmund Burke, on the relationship between an MP and those he represents. It may help him in his present difficulty, as on the Chronicle, June the 30th, your representative owes you not his industry only, but his judgment, and he betrays, instead of serving you, if he sacrifices it to your opinion. And that was from Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Oram's Arbour, Winchester.
And Linda Bannister writes about higher priorities. Sir, I very much object to the City Council's proposal to spend £150,000 revamping the Casson Block area, Chronicle June the 30th. As others have said, it's a very polluted area and it's also very shaded. If people choose to put themselves at risk by lingering here, it's their choice. It is not the Council's job to encourage them to do so. If there is money to spare in these straitened times, I suggest there are other priorities, one of which is the complete refurbishment of the ladies' public toilets adjacent to Debenhams, which are a disgrace to the city. The square near M&S and the Brooks, which used to have a fountain, is ripe for improvement. With redevelopment of the area back on the drawing board, what about some public art, attractive seating and flowers? Linda Bannister, Pine Close, South Wanston, Winchester.
And this one has support for the pub. Sir, I attended the 2014 meeting chaired by Robert Hutchinson, Letters, June the 30th, and the subsequent Station Approach consultation workshops. He is quite right about the level of support for the retention of the former South Western pub, which was the registry office. I have raised the issue at a number of WCC Winchester City Council cabinet meetings and written about it too. I came to the conclusion that nobody at WCC had any intention of encouraging a design which incorporated the building, regardless of the design brief's commitment to consider its retention. The subsequent design has failed to meet with public approval for a range of reasons, but the fundamental criticism is that WCC has put commercial interests above everything else and ignored Winchester's historical and cultural significance and environmental imperatives. In the light of the referendum result, the economic future of the country looks uncertain, to say the least, and Winchester is hardly likely to be exempt. I would expect WCC to be reviewing the situation and informing us as to whether the investment in the city from businesses allegedly queuing up for the proposed office blocks is likely to materialise. Before the vote to leave the EU, cabinet members and officers were saying that we should not delay. I suggest that is exactly what we should be doing, rather than pushing blindly on with such an imperfect scheme in the present uncertain economic climate. And that was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
A different subject here, headed Boring Ball Game. Sir, I am not a football fan by any stretch of the imagination, but the blanket coverage of this European Championship has given me little option to view the odd game or two. The play that I have seen is boring in the extreme. All you see is the ball being passed around the players, usually backwards, and getting nowhere. How can you expect to score goals when you're nowhere near the goal? It is just pathetic, tip-tap football, and falling over and feigning injury. Look at the English rugby team. We have a manager who stands no nonsense, has a balanced view of the game, and is a great manager. And that was from Mike Manley, Bighton Lane, Gundleton, Oresford.
And Michael Fielding writes about confused traffic. Sir, the customary answer to the pub quiz question, where in the UK can one legally drive on the right side of the road, is by the entrance to London Savoy Hotel under an Act of 1902. Here in Winchester, there is something curious about the parking on the northern and eastern sides of what I call the ice rink roundabout in the cathedral's inner close. Some drivers go round it clockwise, others go round it anti-clockwise. Is it the latter who are the non-conformists? Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And now Sarah Robinson writes, towing the lines. Sir, I was extremely disappointed to read that Steve Brine plans to vote through the repeal of the 1972 European Communities Act, Chronicle June the 30th. He says he is a Democrat and will not ignore the electorate, but in saying he will just roll over and wave Brexit through Parliament, he is in fact ignoring his own electorate, the constituents who voted him in, and who he is supposedly representing in government. Steve is clearly very confident in his ability to retain his seat in the next general election, but with the resurgence of the Liberal Democrats post-referendum, I think he would be wise to consider the wishes of the people who may choose to vote him out. Sarah Robinson, Vernon Road, Winchester.
This one headed incorrect signage. Sir, a recently erected sign at the entrance to the all-weather sports pitches at Perrin School in Oresford includes the following. Private property. Trespassers will be prosecuted. The following is prohibited in this area. No food, no drink, no smoking. In the first place, I may be wrong, but I had always assumed that state schools were public property. Second, trespass is a civil matter that cannot normally be criminally prosecuted. Third, if three things are going to be prohibited, then surely the plural form of the verb should be used. Finally, if no eating, no drinking, and no smoking are prohibited, does that imply they are compulsory? Were this notice an answer to an exam question, I would award it a grade E, but only on the basis that the school had at least spelled its name correctly at the top of the paper. Written by Stephen Percy of Easton.
And Alistair Marsden brings us back to that topic, and Steve Brine saying, Tories to blame. Sir, Steve Brine has asked for a period of reflection, Chronicle June the 30th. After going through initial sadness, then anger at the result, I have now reflected and I hold the Conservative Party to blame for the disastrous referendum. Steve should respect the clear mandate from Winchester and continue to campaign against Brexit. This is far too important to stick to party lines that have been shaped by populist conservative politicians that have misled the public and that value their careers over the country's interests. The Conservatives always use the EU cynically, exaggerating the criticisms and ignoring the benefits of it to maximise votes. For the few Conservatives that did campaign actively to remain, this history of negativity meant that their campaign lacked authenticity. This was hugely consequential to the result. We are now in a desperate situation, and not just economically. For me, the main reason to vote Remain was to ensure a secure future for my children. We seem to have forgotten the two world wars that cost the lives of 98 million people. In our forgetfulness, we have not given enough credit to the EU's significant contribution to the peace that we have enjoyed since 1945. Peace becomes easier when we work more closely together, spend more time in each other's company, and trade freely. The EU helped ensure that the extreme views rife in the 1930s have not been as influential since. In the aftermath of the referendum, these views are now more prominent in the UK and Europe than at any time since the 1940s. The prospects of a divided Europe, the rise of the far right, and Putin's continuing aggressiveness are now a frightening cocktail. So come on, Steve. Fight for the Winchester electorate that gave you the opportunity to represent us in Parliament. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
And James Anderson writes, reality check. Sir, Norway sells far more to the EU than it buys, and in return had to accept free movement. The UK is in the converse situation, and the question is as to what concessions the UK can demand in return. It is the EU that needs the reality check here, as it appears to be dawning on Angela Merkel. So just where is the idea coming from that we will have to accept free movement? National leadership that understand its negotiating hand and is capable of shrewd deals is required here. And that was from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Service is ruined. This is heading this letter. Sir, sure start services for the under fives and their families were an unparalleled national success. The last Labour government was determined to address both childcare and education issues for the under fives across the UK. The strategies and investment were designed to gradually improve the most vulnerable children's lives. It was an investment to protect the youngest in our society from hard-working, low-paid families who could not afford the luxury and expense of private nurseries or childcare. It offered a very good educational start, vital for their all-round development. Hampshire County Council have now formally executed the Sure Start scheme in another act of pure destruction and spite. They say that they do not have the funding to sustain 43 out of the original 57 centres because of the economies demanded by the government, their own majority party. This is complete nonsense. They have the funding, but they deliberately choose not to make this quality provision a priority service for those who will not be able to travel the distances required to the hubs or to rely on digital services. This irreplaceable service will be provided by 11 hubs and digital services. What a complete nonsense. Doesn't any Tory member for education and social services realise that it is precisely because these services did not exist that the Labour government introduced this excellent, local, community-based, accessible provision? Yet again, the caring, compassionate Conservatives acts a significantly high, successful public service. It is a senseless and destructive act heaped upon the society's vulnerable children who cannot speak for themselves. Yet again, we've been subjected to the embarrassing spectacle of Lib Dem crocodile tears as they weep with frustration over this decision. It was their coalition government minister who signed the Sure Start death warrant by not ring-fencing Sure Start funding in 2011. And that was from Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Judith Martin, its letter is headed Representation, and we're back at Brexit. Sir, your report of Steve Bryan's switch from Remain to Brexit, chronicled June the 30th, doesn't give quite the whole story. Yes, Winchester voted to Remain by a margin of 17.85%, nearly five times the national majority for Brexit. But data from the Winchester district polling station show that only one of the 45 wards voted to leave the EU. Southwick and Wickham voted 1,428 to 1,213 for Brexit, while the five city wards all returned substantial Remain votes. In the case of St Michael Ward, the vote was 3,446 to 1,635 to Remain. That's over 2-1. St Michael's has three Conservative councillors, and it was, after all, Mr Brine's own party leader heading the campaign to Remain. It's not good enough to talk about the will of the British people. For one thing, the people of Scotland have voted emphatically to Remain and are now likely to vote to leave the rest of the UK. The people of Winchester have made their opinion extremely clear, and their MP should represent them when it comes to debate the referendum in Parliament. His responsibility is to Winchester, not to Brexiteers in Sunderland or Cornwall. The workers at Nissan in Sunderland, fearing for their factory, are now contemplating the future and regretting their vote. In Cornwall, which has received €2.5 billion from the EU, yet forget that in the polling station, voters are asking the UK government to guarantee future funds. In the leaked words of Michael Gove's wife, quoting Michael Caine in The Italian Job, "You were only meant to blow the bloody doors off." Then, on the letters page, your colourful correspondent John Airey from Kingsworthy talks about the hell of the last 40 years under the EU. The reader turns the page and finds Anniversary of Hell, an account of the Battle of the Somme 100 years ago. Did you make the juxtaposition on purpose? Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And on a completely different story, one rather after my own heart, fewer ducks? Sir, having lived next to the Lochburn stream in St Cross for many years, we were very aware of the new families of ducklings every spring. However, for the last 5 or 6 years, there have been no baby ducklings or moorhens at all, nor have I seen any along the stream into town, only the cygnets. The parent mallards are still demanding food at my back door, although fewer in number, of course, but no eggs manage to hatch. Could this relate to the end of the City Council's free pest control service, which kept the rats at bay? I believe the mink have now passed through the area, and the stream is now too shallow for the otters, should either of them have been suspects. Have others been aware of this decline, and is there anything we can do to reverse it? I do keep rats under control in the garden, and the water vole seems to be enjoying the bank opposite my window as a result. And that was, I'm afraid, from me, Jane Harding, Backstreet, St Cross. And I have to say, cycling in here this morning along the Lochburn stream, I didn't see a single duck or duckling. I heard a coot and I did see three enormous cygnets, but no moorhens either.
And on that note, we will conclude the letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. Now, the next item we'll all know the result of by the time that you come to listen to this edition. But anyway, it's still very interesting to know what the people of Winchester thought about this particular item. Yes, it's time for your say. And with the Conservative Party leadership race hotting up, who are you backing as the next Prime Minister? Shirley has the answers.
Yes, indeed. The first one is Mary Edwards, 76, retired of Romsey Road, Winchester. She said, "I have been a Tory supporter for many years and I was saddened to hear Cameron was stepping down. I think May has got to be the next Prime Minister to continue his work." And the next one was Jordan Croft, 32 years old, a builder of Stanmore Lane, Stanmore. And he said, "I am not a Tory supporter and will never be one, but I think Gove should be PM. I voted Leave because of him and Boris, and I think he will lead the transition of Brexit better than anyone else." And then Rachel Newbury, 32, customer assistant of Meadow Way Badger Farm, said, "I'm not happy we voted to leave, so I don't want Gove. I think Andrea Leadsom will win it because I've heard a lot of good things about her." And lastly, we have Jake Jones, 21, a bookseller of Badger Farm Road. He said, "We need someone who will lead us through this difficult time the best they can. I heard May could call for a second referendum, so I hope she gets in for that reason."
And now we're going back through the mists of time into our dusty files for the historical items. And we'll start with 25 Years Ago, read by Noel.
Yes, two items from July the 5th, 1991. The first is headed "Free Parking Doomed." Free hourly parking in Winchester could become a thing of the past if a voucher parking scheme, agreed in principle, is introduced. Under the new scheme, motorists wishing to park in controlled one-hour waiting zones will buy a book of vouchers from a shop and display a voucher on the windscreen each time they park. The voucher will indicate the date and time of their arrival. Members of Winchester City Council's Health and Works Engineering Services Subcommittee agreed in principle to the scheme on Monday, but it requires the approval of Hampshire County Council and the Department of Transport before it can be implemented. And the second item is Visitor Centre Scheme. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Trevor Beeson, has unveiled plans for the new Visitors and Education Centre at the Cathedral. They combine modern triangular glass and lead roofs for the restaurant with a more traditional stone, flint and brick-built conference room. The centre also incorporates the existing 17th century coach house as an entrance and gift shop. The £1 million development is to be situated in a large garden of one of the close houses, discreetly located behind the existing close wall. The money is to come from the £7 million cathedral campaign, of which £4 million has been raised so far.
Jane's going to take us back 50 years.
And two little items from 50 years ago, July the 1st, 1966. Firstly, young yobbos. Vandalism on a King Alfred bus means that children attending the county secondary schools, Winchester, will in the future be walking home from school. The relief, which runs as a school special on the number 16 route in the afternoon, has been withdrawn by Richard Chisnell and Sons Limited following the extensive tearing and cutting of seats on the top deck. The damage is estimated at £100. "This is the culmination of vandalism which has been going on for months and months," said Mr. R. Chisnell yesterday, Friday. "We have been putting up with it for a long time. I threatened the education officer of the Hampshire County Council on several occasions that we had seriously considered withdrawing school buses if we got any continuation of this trouble." And secondly, formidable task. Mr. Morris Hackett, chairman of the South East Economic Planning Council, said in London on Wednesday that planning the future development of the South East, the largest, most prosperous and most economically important region in the country, was a formidable task posing many difficult problems, in particular those of housing and transport, which were as challenging as any in the world today. Mr. Hackett, who was speaking at the annual meeting of the London Council of Social Service, said the common objective of planners was to achieve a just and more pleasant life for the people.
And it's back another to 100 years ago with you, Shirley.
Right, 100 years ago, July 8th, 1916, headed Somme Offensive. The fighting in the Western Theatre of War entered a new phase on Saturday when the British and French troops embarked on what our Allies call a methodical push along a front of 25 miles on the Somme and Ancre valleys. The best progress was made along the sides of the River Somme on the direction of Compel and Beronne. On the right bank, our troops, who are fighting with great gallantry, have taken Fricourt, Mametz and Montauban, and the French have occupied Kerlou, to the southeast of these villages. On the left bank, our allies have stormed Becquincourt, Dompierre, Boussou and Fay. And on the Russian front, our allies are contributing to the plan by attacking practically along the whole front from the Baltic to the Carpathians.
And finally, Noel's going to take us back 200 years ago.
Yes, two items from July the 8th, 1816. And this one's extraordinary. The heading is Lightning Strike. The Carlisle paper states that on Saturday last, between 1 and 2 in the afternoon, the armoury of the castle in that city was struck with lightning during the continuance of a thunderstorm. The fluid entered the chimney, passed through the ceiling, knocked down and broke several drums, ran from sword to sword, melting them in several places, and searing the scabbards from the swords. From there, it struck a pile of pikes and, encountering a nail, went through the floor into the next apartment. Here it was attracted by the point of a bayonet, which it melted blunt, and then ran from musket to musket, shattering to pieces the stock of one. The chimney, where the lightning first struck, is very much shattered. And then newspapers seized. So tenacious are the police at Dieppe respecting the introduction of English newspapers into France by the different passengers entering that port, that a seizure, it is said, is immediately made of every one which they observe in the possession of travellers. An instance lately occurred to a foreigner who had a variety of London papers in his trunk. When it was examined at the bureau, the commissary made a seizure of them, and notwithstanding the gentleman assured him that the publications were favourable to the Bourbon government, it was unavailing.
And it's back to the present. Jane is now going to read an alternative look at the news because she's got Balgarham Diary.
And Balgarham has three articles this week. Firstly, roses are rent at hospice. The rent has been paid. It is probably the least onerous in the country. Lewis Tupper, aged 8, from Southampton, handed over Naomi House and Jack's Place 20th annual rent payment. Lewis Tupper and his family presented Naomi Cornelius Reed with one dozen red roses on Midsummer's Day. The tradition dates back to before Naomi House opened in 1997, when Cornelius Reed, the owner of Sutton Manor Estate, allowed a hospice to be built on her land at Sutton Scotney. The offer came with two conditions, that the hospice be named after her youngest daughter, Naomi, and that every Midsummer's Day the hospice pay a peppercorn rent of 12 red roses. Although Mrs. Cornelius Reed died in 2014, staff honour the tradition. Lewis, who stays at Naomi House, was all smiles as he handed over a stunning bouquet of roses to Naomi. Keith Wilson, hospice spokesman, said, "Despite being the day that our rent is due, Midsummer's Day is a day we will look forward to. I would like to thank the Cornelius Reed family for their ongoing support and thank Lewis Tupper and family for paying our rent with real panache. Our 20th year is going to be a busy one as we develop." And this one is accompanied by a lovely photograph of little Lewis in his wheelchair, presenting the roses, but with a broad grin on his face. And she then goes on to write about Silver Hill. Silver Hill has changed face. So, the City Council is going back to square one over Silver Hill. A new committee is looking at ideas. Interestingly, the area that this new committee will be looking at is not the same as the previous area for Silver Hill, which roughly fell between Middlebrook Street and Eastgate Street and the Broadway and Friars Gate. The new area also includes the Brook Centre and the Middlebrook Street car park north of Friars Gate. There have been long calls for the Brooks to be part of any redevelopment as it has been struggling for years. But the inclusion of Middlebrook Street is piquing interest. Balgarham suggests that the car park might make a new place for a multi-storey car park, which would allow the development in Silver Hill to be lower. The height of the proposed buildings was a major factor in the opposition. The Greens argue there should be no multi-storey either in Silver Hill or Middlebrook Street. But we've run out of space to go into that one here. And finally, Painter Goes Public. As a scenic spot for painting, Jewellery Street in Winchester probably isn't the most peaceful place. Artists can more often be found in the River Itch and Water Meadows, where John Keats once strolled, or on St Giles's Hill, looking across the city centre. The calmness of the surroundings seems to be part of the process. So, Don Lavelle from Romsey has bucked the trend. He has been busy painting a large picture of Jewellery Street next to the busy bus stop outside Barclays. When the Hampshire Chronicle chatted to him last week, he said he is in his fifth day of painting and is expected to take him 2 weeks. Passers-by have been impressed with the 70-year-old's skills. The acrylics on canvas picture is a private commission that will then be on display in a commercial premises. Mr. Lavelle said, "It's really good to see people's responses. A lot of people stop and talk to me, and my wife is teaching me how to paint and talk at the same time." And there is a picture of Don Lavelle at work on a large canvas with a painting in gentle acrylics of Jury Street.
We now have the editorial comment, and it's read by Shirley.
Right. It is headed, "A Mistake to Close Sure Start Centres. A terrible decision has been made by Hampshire County Council. The confirmation last Friday to close most of the Sure Start centres in Hampshire is a retrograde step. They were set up by the Labour government to help parents in the first couple of years. By early intervention and support, children would get a better start in life with benefits down the line. They have been regarded as a success and cost-effective because such help prevents more expensive intervention by social services or the NHS at a later stage. All that is endangered. The County Council may be keeping 11 out of the 43 Sure Start centres, but everyone in Winchester is to close. The only one left in the area covered by Winchester City Council will be in Wickham. The council justifies Wickham on the grounds that it is a deprived area. You can make any argument with statistics. What about the fact that parts of Stanmore and Winnall are in the bottom quarter for deprivation in the entire country? And yet parents, often depressed or cash-strapped or with little motivation, are being asked to get a bus around 20 miles to Wickham, and not even on a direct route, to get advice and support. This County Council decision is a classic for an authority that is, in reality, never going to relinquish power and never has to seriously weigh the electoral impact of its decisions."
George Hayter is our contributor this week to First Person, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, his headline is "Peace Won the Referendum." "My reaction to the cataclysmic Brexit majority was to mow my overgrown lawn. That wasn't to take my mind off economic uncertainty, but rather to try and do my bit to keep the nation's morale up. It was the front lawn I tackled because I wanted passers-by to see my neatly trimmed grass to help reassure people that despite the wrench from Europe, everything was still right with the neighbourhood and right with the world. Now, 2 weeks after the referendum, it's hard to remember how shocking the Leave vote felt, especially to Remain voters like me. Every other country, from North America to Southeast Asia, has spent the last decades trying to get into a free trade area, and now here we are trying to get out of one. I wasn't the only person asking, what have we done to our country? Investors took fright, and shares and the pound plummeted worldwide. What with ISIS, Putin and Trump, the world already looked dangerous, and now the UK referendum has increased instability. What could I do to help? Sprucing up the front garden was the only thing I came up with. I hoped lawn trim might give the neighbours a vague subliminal reinforcement that the world still had some stability. For anyone depressed by Brexit, I thought, their seeing an improvement in my unkempt garden might relieve anxiety that everything will get worse now that we're leaving the EU. If the vote had been followed by thunder and lightning, many would have taken that as a bad omen. If instead the weather had produced blissful warmth and sunshine, people would have thought that that was a sign that the British electorate had made the right decision. I reckon that me trimming the grass was the nearest I could get to bringing out the sun. Since my big mow, shares have rocketed. The pound has recovered a bit too. At a time of writing, it's still lower than before the vote, but a feeble pound should boost exports and may put upward pressure on interest rates, helping savers. With referendum campaigning over, both warring factions should seek reconciliation and look for the good in the enemy's argument. So Remainers like me should try to delight in the prospect of the UK becoming its own master again, with perhaps reduced immigration leading to higher pay for unskilled workers. In times of high unemployment around the world, somewhere near the floor is where every country would like its currency to be. For their part, voters who supported Brexit might have the generosity to concede that actually most EU legislation is sensible, even inevitable in a complex modern society. No one expected a Leave vote. I think the main reasons for it were Angela Merkel and the Daily Mail. It has had its readers on a constant diet of anti-EU stories for years, while the German leader encouraged other European governments to accept a flood of immigrants. That turned Britain against the EU because of its policy of free movement of people. The referendum has produced one bright spot, every bit as spectacular as my newly mown lawn. The referendum has been a sunny triumph of peace. Through history, national borders have usually shifted as a result of bloodshed. Wars have been constant mechanism for the expansion and contraction of rival empires. Territory changed hands in exchange for arrows or bullets. But the contraction of the EU, which we are seeing now, is not a result of death and destruction. Our withdrawal is happening because of a democratic vote. It's simply what most people wanted. So I'm not mourning any dead relatives slaughtered in battle or counting the cost of an extravagant war. I'm just worrying that it's about time I got out and mowed the lawn again.
And it's time for this week's announcements. Excuse me. When you receive the July edition of the Talking Magazine, you will hear at the beginning, for July 2006. Now, this is an error. It should have been 2016, so you have got the correct edition. Now, this is to help you get help with your tax. Many people find tax matters confusing, but there are ways of getting help. RNIB has a team who support people with sight loss, with income tax issues. The service, supported by His Majesty Revenue and Customs, HMRC, provides information about tax allowances, such as the blind person's allowance and the marriage allowance, which can reduce your tax bill. RNIB can help you with queries related to income tax, tax-free savings, VAT-free products, and tax credits. The team can also contact HMRC to help with resolving problems and to arrange support with completing tax forms and self-assessment tax returns. What is the blind person's allowance? Well, people registered as blind or severely sight impaired can claim the blind person's allowance. The allowance is £2,290. This can reduce tax by £458 this year. You can backdate the allowance to the previous 4 years. You can also transfer the allowance to your husband, wife, or civil partner. What is a marriage allowance? The government introduced the marriage allowance tax break in 2015. It lets you and your partner share part of your tax-free personal allowance to help lower your overall tax bill. In 2016-17, you can transfer £1,100 of your personal allowance to your partner, which will save up to £220 in tax. To apply for the marriage allowance, you need to be married or in a civil partnership. Both partners need to be born on or after 6th of April 1935. One partner needs to be a non-taxpayer and the other partner has to be a basic rate taxpayer. RNIB want to make sure anyone who is eligible receives these tax allowances and the team can help you with claiming them. In most cases, it can be done easily over the phone with no forms to complete. Well, how do you contact RNIB's tax advice team? For help and information on income tax and HMRC-related issues, you can call RNIB on 0345 330 4897. That's 0345 330 4897. or 0151 703 5721. That's 0151 702 5721. Or the email address is tax@rnib.org.uk. You can find more information online. Go to www.rnib.org.uk/tax. Now here's what's on, and it's for the week beginning Monday the 11th of July. On Tuesday the 12th of July, the Winchester Cathedral Classic Guitar Lunchtime Concert is 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's free, but you do have a retiring collection. Going on to the next week, Monday the 18th of July, the Cathedral Undercroft Tea at 3 p.m. Tea, cake and a chat, only £2.50. Then on Tuesday the 19th of July, Winchester Cathedral, 1 p.m. to 2 p.m, there's a chamber choir concert, which is free with a retiring collection. For details of all the above, please phone 01962 857 200. Then on Saturday the 23rd of July, there's the Alsford Summer Fair, and it's part of Hampshire Food Festival. There'll be more details a bit later. Tuesday the 26th of to Thursday the 28th of July, there's the famous New Forest Show at the Showground New Park, Brockenhurst. For details, phone 0159 06 22 400, or email for information at info@newforestshow.co.uk. And remember, Open Sight, Hampshire's principal organisation for visually impaired people, is always available for help and advice on 0238064 1244. I'll do that again. 0238064 1244. Now, the lighting up time ends on Friday the 8th of July at 5:01 a.m. and begins at 9:19 p.m. And on Wednesday the 13th of July, it ends at 5:06 a.m. and begins at 9:15 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. We're now going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And here we have soundscape inspired by days in the Downs. There are few places more beautiful and indeed inspiring than the South Downs. So if there is any surprise that the stunning countryside of the National Park that stretches from Winchester through Sussex has now been musically captured, it is that it hasn't been done before. Now, local composer Damian Montague and trumpet player Stuart Prosser have joined forces with actor Hugh Bonneville to release an album of music and poetry inspired by the Downs. Inner South Downs Way was released on June the 17th, and the collection of beautiful music marks the start of a new recording series called Walk Upon England, bringing together rural composers and artists to create a soundscape of the English countryside. The album is a beautiful collection of tracks written by Damian for strings, piano and brass, with Hugh narrating some of his original writing, together creating an evocative celebration of the South Downs. The compositions are performed by the Tippett Quartet, as well as by a group of Sussex musicians, including ex-Paul Weller trumpeter Stuart Prosser, who co-produced the album. Hugh chose The Path Towards Tomorrow from the album as one of his tracks on BBC Radio 4's Desert Island Discs, and the piece immediately went to number one on the iTunes classical chart. Hugh later discussed how he became involved in the project. My friend Damian played me some tracks that he and Stuart were developing and asked me to read some poetry over the wonderful music. It inspired me to offer some words of my own. In a South Downs Way reminds me of the place I'm lucky enough to call home. Damien was inspired while walking alone in the South Downs with his dog Salvador the Labradoodle and the cockapoo Gertie, and wrote melodies during a number of meditative, introspective journeys, capturing them on a portable device as he went. The recordings were then arranged and co-produced in his Sussex recording studio. It was as if, and this may sound slightly wacky, the South Downs, while inspiring the music in me, were taking some ownership of the compositions, said Damien. I had recently lost someone close to me, and walking is a good way to help with the healing process. As I did so, the pieces kept coming to mind, and I quickly had to record them by humming or singing into my mobile phone. I was surrounded by birdsong and beauty and felt inspired to capture what it felt like to be there and experience the downs themselves. Damien warns, however, that although the music has been described as hauntingly beautiful, it is not all upbeat. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the beautiful stretch of the South Downs with Stuart Prosser, Hugh Bonneville and Damien Montague walking along them. And the cover of the CD, In a South Downs Way.
Norton Park launches search for nation's best wedding speech. The search is on to find the nation's best wedding speech as Norton Park, near Winchester, launches the 2016 Wedding Speech Awards. Norton Park and Kew Hotels Wedding Speech Awards, now in its second year, will recognise the best speeches given at weddings, whether emotional, sentimental, or just plain hilarious. Over the next 2 months, Norton Park is calling for speech givers and wedding guests in Hampshire to enter the awards by posting a video of the speech they think truly stands out on Kew Hotels' Facebook page using the hashtag WeddingSpeech. This year, the Kew Hotels panel of judges will put together a short list of entries and the public will then be invited to vote for their winner from the shortlisted speeches. Prizes include breaks at a choice of Kew Hotels, as well as golf and spa treats. Last year's winner, Chris Hall from Yorkshire, won the Best Speech Award with his Best Man speech, which took the form of a heartwarming and hilarious song. Commenting on his win, Chris said, "There's a lot of pressure on the best man to get the laughs, and I was really struggling writing a funny original speech. Then I heard McFly's Tom Fletcher's wedding song and suddenly thought I could do something like that. I knew that it went down well on the day, but never expected it to win a prize. I was so over the moon when I found out." Tom Fromm, general manager at Norton Park, said, "We received so many fantastic entries into last year's awards, with a range of memorable wedding speeches shared by the nation. Last year, music was used in speeches like Chris's, but in the 2016 entries, we expect to see video production as well as other creative ways to wow wedding parties. Entries can be submitted by the speech givers themselves or a wedding guest, and must be available on a public video platform. The launch of the Wedding Speech Awards follows the success of the Kew Hotels Wedding Photo Awards, which took place earlier this year and received over 100 entries and 1,000 votes. This year's Wedding Speech Awards will be open to entries until August the 31st, 2016. For more information and terms and conditions, visit qhotels.co.uk/weddingspeechawards. And with this article, there's a very nice photograph of this Norton Park Hotel in Winchester.
This is Q&A, My Winchester. Robert Moore, 28, an interior design consultant of Harestock Road, Winchester, tells us his favourite things about the city. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? I like Cafe Nero. The staff are friendly and the coffee is really nice. It's also a nice place to meet mates. Favourite pub or bar? When I was a student at Winchester University, I used to go to Alfie's. I think that's probably still my favourite, but I also go to the Bishop on the Bridge. Favourite shop? I really like Crewe Clothing. It is tucked away on the high street and you get some good quality stuff in there. And favourite view? My parents used to take me to the cathedral grounds when I was growing up. That's got to be my favourite view. It's so peaceful and tranquil there. And favourite building? I'd have to say the cathedral again, if it's an architectural masterpiece. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? It's a toss-up between King Alfred and the cathedral. They are the two things that are associated with the city the most. The cathedral edges it for me. What's Winchester's best-kept secret? The Kingsgate area. It has a lovely pub and a wonderful Tudor Georgian feel to it, and it's always quiet. And what's the best thing about Winchester? The vibe. It has a great historical feeling, and I always feel safe here, which will keep my mother happy. And the worst? Probably the homelessness. It takes away from what is a beautiful city. It's strange that the issue hasn't been sorted. And what's the most overrated thing? The high street. Not a lot going on, a lack of range of different shops. If there was one thing you could change about the city, what would it be? Nothing. I love the place. And describe Winchester in a sentence, the best city in the country.
And here we have Town's MP in call to get more women into power. Women in Hampshire were called upon to take more influential roles in business and politics at an event attended by more than 40 leading female decision-makers. Eastleigh MP Mims Davies led the call together with Ali Taylor, whose company, Taylor Made Computer Solutions, sponsored the evening entitled Driving Women in Power, held at the Hendy Ford store in the Townsley Road. Our country needs the very best talent and women have to make sure that they make their voices heard, said Mims Davies, who said that men still dominated the benches in Parliament and boardrooms across the UK. Mims explained that since 1918, there had only been 459 female MPs. She was number 380. The fact is, there are still more male MPs in the Commons today than there have been female MPs in the whole of the country's history, she commented. She said STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering and mathematics, were important to youngsters as these areas would be where the jobs were in the future. TaylorMade's HR director, Ali Taylor, gave her view of the challenges facing women in IT. Findings from the Tech Partnership's Women in IT scorecard reveal that just 17% of technology specialists in the UK are women, and that less than 1 in 10 of these are in leadership roles. Ali says the statistics show that the sector is missing out on valuable talent. Encouraging women to consider roles in the IT sector is something we're incredibly passionate about at TaylorMade. If you have what it takes, please get in touch, she said, and added, like Mims, we are determined to encourage youngsters to adopt the STEM subjects so they are fully equipped to come into our sector. Mark Busby, commercial director of Hosts Hendy, gave an insight into why women buy cars. The research shows that women are really excited about the prospect of going into a showroom to buy a car, but sadly, they're often disappointed by the level of engagement they find. We have introduced geniuses to help people choose the right car. Interestingly, the majority of our geniuses are women, which speaks volumes. TaylorMade's website is tmcs.co.uk. And this is accompanied by two smiling photographs of Ali Taylor, director of TaylorMade Computer Solutions, with Mims Davies, MP for Eastleigh, at the Driving Women in Power event in Eastleigh. Presumably very happy that there are now two women standing for Prime Minister.
Littleton Barracks set for closure. Sir John Moore Barracks on the edge of Winchester is under threat, a meeting heard. In an announcement at Cabinet yesterday, just before the Chronicle went to press, leader of Winchester City Council, Stephen Godfrey, said, "We had been approached by the Defence Infrastructure Organisation about their view of land that is being considered for release from military services. Sir John Moore Barracks is on the list for review, and we are expecting an announcement in the near future. I have written to Ministers Mark Lancaster and Greg Clark and Steve Brine to express my concerns that a decision to close the barracks means a connection to the military going back 200 years would be lost. This land contains valuable employment, and we do not want to see employment lost during the change. We do not want to see that land used for housing redevelopment. We know our local plan is very clear about that matter." The news comes only a month after the Chronicle revealed the 25-year-old barracks was in danger. At the time, the Ministry of Defence said it had no plans to sell the site at Littleton. Councillor Godfrey told the Chronicle last month that he does not want to see the land earmarked for housing, as he says Winchester has enough land allocated for housing, such as Barton Farm, to last for another 20 years. Every year, around 1,000 recruits go through 14 weeks of basic training at the Army Training Regiment, Winchester. Around 300 staff are employed there. The MOD has plans to cut its land estate by around 30%.
Foreign students are welcomed by notes. It is the touching sentiment to let foreign students at a Winchester language school feel welcome. Winchester School of English in Hyde Street received handwritten messages in the shape of hearts with a simple message telling them that they are loved. It comes after the Hampshire Chronicle reported how community leaders and MPs across Hampshire have appealed for calm and tolerance after reports of racist abuse in the wake of the Brexit result announced on June the 24th. The National Police Chiefs Council has reported a 57% rise in reports of hate crime to its online hate crime reporting site, True Visions, in the past month. But on social media, there have been touching stories of support for communities in the country that have been affected and may feel marginalised by the vote. The school, which currently has around 30 students from across the world, received the gesture, which had the message in 23 languages, last Tuesday morning. They were first seen by Principal Adam Smith, who said he doesn't know who sent them. Mr. Smith said, "It's a very simple gesture, and someone has thought about the people here and how they will be interpreting events, and through that gesture they have sent a very important, heartwarming message." Mr. Smith said he and members of staff at the school voted to remain in the European Union and admitted they were shocked by the result. He said he is concerned by the rise in reports of hate crime towards migrants and minorities in Britain, such as the Polish community. Mr. Smith added, "For me, this is a nice antidote as you go on Facebook and the news and you hear these appalling stories. And it's almost like a minority of people feel that racism has been legitimised by this vote. To see suddenly people shouting in public, 'Go home, get out,' is a step backwards. It is just heartbreaking. I'm optimistic, and I hope people coming to the country are more aware of the sentiment of this message than the sentiment that led us to where we are now," he said. Winchester was one of the few places in Hampshire where the vote to remain in the EU was more popular than a vote to leave. The Winchester area, which mirrored the City Council area, voted by around 60% to 40% to remain, compared to the national result of 48% to 52%.
And now shock as NHS boss keeps job. Families failed by an under-fire mental health trust have blasted the decision to keep Chief Executive Katrina Percy in post. No one will lose their job at Southern Health despite months of pressure over its failure to investigate hundreds of deaths. An internal review released yesterday found no evidence of negligence or incompetence of any individual board member. Relatives of patients who suffered under the trust care have spoken of their extreme shock and described the decision as beyond belief. Health Minister Alistair Burt said Ms Purse's future is not set in stone and pledged to discuss it with the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt. Interim Chairman Tim Stewart admitted the organisation was stretched and unveiled plans to transfer some services to other providers. The decision has enraged the families of patients who died whilst under Southern Health's care. Investigations by the NHS and Care Quality Commission, CQC, found the Trust was continuing to put patients at risk and had failed in its handling of 450 of the 722 deaths in the Trust over 4 years. Justice for LB, the group representing relatives of 18-year-old Connor Sparrowhawk, said they were incredulous at the decision. Connor, who had epilepsy and autism, drowned unsupervised in a bathtub during a seizure in 2013. Southern Health initially denied responsibility for the death, but was forced to apologise earlier this month. An inquest found neglect contributed to Connor's drowning. A statement issued by families of patients who died under Southern Health said, "It is beyond belief, given the clear evidence available and a long succession of failures that have come to light." The statement added, "We have not given up and we are not going to go away. Instead, we have been energised by this unjust decision to continue our fight for the people that now have no voice." Ms Purse's role will shift from operations to strategy and parts of the Trust outside Hampshire will be broken up. Mark Aspinall, a Trust governor who quit in April in protest at the board, said, "That's just not good enough. Who is responsible for the failure at the Trust if it's not the chief executive and the board?" Announcing this decision to families in Winchester last Wednesday, Mr Smart said the Trust had been stretched and would relinquish some of its services. In a statement, he said, "I am satisfied that whilst the board should have acted in a more united way, I have found no evidence of negligence or incompetence of any individual board member."
And this one is headed, "Trampoline Deemed Unsafe." A Winchester teenager may have to stop her hobby because of council red tape. Winchester City Council say they will remove a trampoline used by children in Pound Road, Kingsworthy, as it poses a safety risk and there is not enough space. This is despite its use by keen trampolinist Josie Dale, 13 years old, and others who use the trampoline on the council-owned communal area. In letters sent to residents, the council says the trampoline, which has been there for 6 years, has attracted complaints and is a safety risk. Josie, a pupil at Henry Beaufort School and a member of Winchester Gymnastics Club, has been doing gymnastics since the age of 3. Her mother, Sharon, said, "I will have to stop her taking part in competitions if she can't use it." Josie said, "I would really be upset if I can't use it because it is a big part of my life." County Councillor Jackie Porter is calling for the council to have a rethink. She said, "Josie's parents have taken safety measures and I think all reasonable care has been taken to make it safe." And with this article, we have a lovely picture of Josie in mid-leap on the trampoline.
Vets warn of dog disease increase. Dog owners across Hampshire are being urged to take extra care to combat a deadly disease. People are being warned about Alabama rot, the cause of several canine deaths in the New Forest. According to vets, the disease is spreading as cases have been confirmed in at least 27 counties in England and Wales since 2012. The cause is still unknown and treatments are at best 30% successful. It's an illness which first appeared in the late 1980s, affecting greyhounds in America, and 78 cases have been confirmed in the UK and 14 in 2016 alone. Vets are now working together to help find the causes, including Alabama rot experts Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists and Vets for Pets. To help collate the correct data for dog owners, Anderson Moore's is calling for all UK pet vets to contact them if they see a dog they suspect has Alabama rot.
Officers offered cameras. Firefighters in Hampshire will be the first to roll out a new kit across the country. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service is preparing to offer body-worn cameras to their officers. Fire chiefs called for the new gear to launch first in Hampshire in a bid to give firefighters a more complete picture of incidents. Now, 70 of the cameras are being rolled out. They will be attached to helmets and will be used to evaluate performance. It comes just over a year after Hampshire Constabulary announced it will be giving all frontline police officers body-worn cameras to record when they attended incidents, and fire chiefs say this is why they were inspired to use the technology. The fire service will be using a Reveal model camera. The lightweight cameras have already been used at major incidents, including the fireworks factory explosion in Southampton in May. The cameras will be used regularly and the footage will be used at large or sensitive incidents and help with investigations. And there is a little photograph of one of the cameras attached to the side of a firefighter's helmet, showing what he is actually involved in during the fight.
A nurse struck off over delay. A Winchester nurse has been struck off after she waited half an hour before calling 999 after finding an unresponsive resident. Tsunkaya Joyce Yalungu said, "There's nothing we can do," when she found the man and did not call paramedics. Instead, she went away to call an out-of-hours GP, and it was at least 30 minutes before emergency services were called. Mrs. Nyalungu, who was working at the Berwick Court Nursing Home, Berwick Road, was sacked by her bosses. Professional disciplinary proceedings followed, and she has now been struck off the register by the Nursing and Midwifery Council. Its Conduct and Competence Committee said Mrs. Nyalungu failed to engage with the disciplinary process. Her lack of engagement indicates a lack of insight and blatant disregard of the regulatory process. The panel determined that it was necessary to prevent Mrs. Nyalungu from practising in the future. It concluded that the only sanction that would adequately protect the public was a striking off order. According to NMC papers, Mrs. Nyalungu and a colleague had found the man in an unresponsive state in the early hours in January 2013. She left to call an out-of-hours GP, leaving the colleague to begin resuscitation. A 999 call was only made later. A previous NMC committee found Mrs. Nyalungu's fitness to practice impaired. At the time, she had not followed the home's policy and brought the nursing profession into disrepute. Berwick Court has 56 patients and is run by Bupa Care Homes. In a statement, it said, "We suspended and then dismissed Mrs. Nyalungu in 2013 following an internal and police investigation. The health and well-being of our residents is our priority."
Here's a heartwarming story. Firm steps into revamp school. Cheriton Primary School has a small playground and an extremely limited total outdoor area. Acting head teacher Ali Daffy was desperate to make the space more effective and increase the opportunity for outdoor learning, but as with most schools, she had no spare budget to invest. Luckily for her and new head Andrew Goldsworthy, local engineering firm R&W heard about their challenge through their health and safety advisor Peter Sharp, whose daughter Molly attends the school. Part of the playground was overgrown and fencing and benches were in a state of disrepair. R&W delivered topsoil, gravel and wooden posts and took away rubbish, including the rotten wooden benches. A small army of parents were put to work and the garden was transformed into a plant-ready allotment. The 94 pupils then planted runner beans, courgettes, gherkins, sweet peas and borlotti beans, along with sunflowers and annually fruiting plants like raspberries, gooseberries and blackcurrants. R&W returned and transformed the rest of the outdoor space with new fences, a new bike shed, a bespoke bench surrounding an old oak tree, and a purpose-built sandpit with integrated sliding doors and wheels that allow it to be moved when space is needed for PE. Mr. Goldsworthy said, "As head teacher, I constantly have to prioritise how the school's budget is to be spent. It would have been very challenging to find the funding to develop the school's outside area, but R&W have come to our aid. The whole school community is overwhelmed." R&W Managing Director Andy Theobald said, "We are delighted that we could help Cheriton Primary School."
We've got time for one very, very short item from Jane.
A little tiny item called "Dumped Iguana Owner May Face Action." Mystery surrounds the possible prosecution of a pet owner who dumped an iguana in a Winchester park. Tango is now recovering in the care of the RSPC after she was found in Stanmore last month. An RSPCA spokesman said, asked about whether there should be a prosecution of the owner, said, "An owner has now been found and inquiries into the matter have been made. Tango will not be returning to her previous owner and will remain in the RSPCA's care. She is still recovering from her injury and is being monitored by the vet at the moment, and we are hoping she will be feeling better soon." And there is a delightful picture of a little golden orange iguana with a stripy tail who's probably wishing she could be back in Madagascar.
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending 8th of July 2016. Thank you to our editors Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner and Jane Thomas, and thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Northrop Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet. Please place the address label on the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible when you finish listening. Thank you. And goodbye again.